We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Craig is usually a fan of water cooler talk, but it's draft season, and that's all anyone wants to talk about. The Athletic has loads of articles about this year's draft. But Greg doesn't have The Athletic, so now he's filling up his water bottle in the bathroom sink. Which, to remind you, is the sink people use after they use the bathroom. Get The Athletic and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
From Pod World Headquarters, this is the Carolina Insider from Learfield IMG College.
We're back. Time for another edition of the Carolina Insider Rapid Reaction Edition after Carolina just pounds NC State 48-21. Adam, what was it you said the other day about a red canoe?
You can't get to heaven in a red canoe because God's favorite color is Carolina blue.
Yeah. You knew what you just knew that the Tar Heels were going to row their way up and down the field on Saturday in Keenan Stadium.
Well, you know what else they say over in Raleigh.
What's that, Adam?
Chewed-a-backa, spit, spit, spit. If you ain't from Carolina, we don't give a darn.
And that concludes our 1976 Cheers with Dad. Well, first of all, you can tell Adam's in a good mood.
Because I am.
The Tar Heels won the game against State in pretty dominating fashion. And quite honestly, 48-21, I'm not even sure that really explains to you how much Carolina controlled this game. Other than about five shaky minutes late in the first half, I don't even think you were that nervous during this game for the Tar Heels. And the reason why, Adam, is just like at Virginia or against Virginia Tech, the Tar Heels just did what they wanted offensively. And you never really felt like State could score enough to ever make Carolina be in danger in this game. I mean, the Tar Heels outrushed NC State by nearly 300 yards. The final rushing totals were 326-34. Carolina goes over 550 yards for the third consecutive game. Defensively, they forced four turnovers, two big interceptions, one that was a bit of a gift, and one that Tyrone Hopper and Chaz Surratt combined for an enormous play. And Mac Brown says all the time, Adam, and he said it in our postgame, that the best team doesn't always win. It's the team that plays the best that day. This day, the best team won, and the best team was the team that played the best Saturday afternoon.
I felt like walking out of Keenan Stadium, I was kind of mad at myself that I had been so stressed out at the end of the first half.
Right.
Intellectually, I knew Carolina was dominating time of possession and they clearly were doing whatever they wanted. And I know you said there were just a few shaky minutes. Those minutes seemed like hours because it was so frustrating. And I thought, to his credit, Mac Brown pointed this out when he talked to you, Carolina's got some issues with giving up drives and scores right before half. Mm-hmm. And when State went down and got that touchdown, it seemed like they were, all of a sudden, they had decided to ramp up the tempo and the Tar Heels couldn't quite get it all puzzled out. It just, it, and the field goal went off the upright. I was stressed out then. But then in the second half, I thought back to that moment and I thought, you know what? I don't think I needed to worry.
You know what, Adam? That was silly of you back then, a couple minutes ago.
I wrote a letter to my younger self from an hour previous, and I said, younger Adam, don't you worry about this, because Javonte and the rest of the Tar Heel offensive backfield are loading up the chicken truck, and they're about to run all over this turf.
There's a lot of chicken trucking in this game.
There's a lot.
I want to get to that in a second about the physicality of Carolina's offense, but I thought, and we said this on the air, I thought the biggest sequence of the game was Carolina was up 17-7, had run four plays and had to punt to start the second half. Stated moved to about midfield, and then Tyrone Hopper batted a ball up in the air. Chaz Surratt intercepted it. Carolina then goes down the field and scores four plays, 60 yards. That was when the NC State defense just left Josh Downs. Look, I know Josh Downs hadn't played a lot, but you can't just leave him. And the talented rookie just, I mean, he was, there was no one around him. Sam Howell, accurate throw right there on the money, touchdown. Carolina goes up 24-7. And then it felt like that's, the ball started really going downhill for Carolina at that point.
Yeah, that, and it just felt like the hope that the Wolfpack had after Carolina had gone sort of four and out just wilted away when that happened, because they had already had what looked like was going to be a touchdown pass there in the first half turn into a Tar Heel interception.
What a big play.
Thank you, NC State offense.
Dylan Parham, I believe.
Yes. Thank you, Dylan Parham. And so you just kind of got the sense at that moment that the things weren't going to go right for the Pack. But to the Carolina defensive credit, they forced four turnovers.
Yeah.
Been waiting for that.
So just to continue on that thought for a second about that portion of the game. So that's when State then goes to about midfield again and does the quick kick. And it was a perfectly executed quick kick, right?
Yeah.
So
down on the one.
I mean, it was inside the one. Yeah. Like, I haven't said on the air, it's like the back nose of the football was almost touching the goal line. Like, it was as well executed as you can do it. And then the Tar Heels just decided to go 99 yards in 11 plays, go up 31-7. Very next snap by State, Surratt gets the sack, strips the ball from Finley. Dez Evans falls on it. A couple plays later, Carolina scores again. Boom, that's ball game. And so, but I thought that sequence summed it up. Carolina being able to move at will, even when it was 99 and a half yards away. They just ran the football right up your gut, NC State. And then
it was a hand in the dirt kind of drive.
And then the defense making an impactful play. I mean, the defense wasn't lights out in this game, although it was pretty good. And Mack Brown said, you know, the third string, the younger guys who got in at the end, made the stats look not quite as good for the Tar Heel defense, the scoreboard not quite as good. That's okay. That's why you play them then, so they can go out and get that kind of experience. But the biggest story from the defensive side was Carolina making the impactful play via turnover, mostly, when it had to. And that Surratt sack, Evans recovery, was just another example of that.
Those are the snaps that those backup defenders didn't get against Charlotte. Ideally, they would have played those snaps already, but now they're getting them because the offense is so good. Another thing about that 99.5-yard drive, it only took 353.
Well, I mean,
to go the entire length of the field.
I thought for 1 second Javonte Williams was going to take it 99 yards.
Too.
Adam, Javonte Williams, and I know Travis Etienne's probably, he's going to be first team all conference because he's Travis Etienne, and I get it, and he's a great player. Javonte Williams has to be in consideration for first team all conference at running back, where there are a lot of good running backs. You know, Khalil Herbert at Virginia Tech. Shoot, Michael Carter. I mean, there are a lot of guys. Javonte Williams has to be in that discussion if things continue along this way. And he was so good today, Adam. 160 yards rushing, and he did it by spinning by people. He did it by juking people. He did it by running through people. He did it by waiting patiently and hitting a seam real hard. I know people are probably tired of talking about it. Those two running backs, Adam, it's been since Curtis and Leon Johnson, I think, that you felt like you had two guys at this level. And Lee and I talked about it a little bit, and Lee brought up a really good point of I think now Michael Carter, Javonte Williams have proven that they need to be in that discussion with Amos Lawrence and Kelvin Bryant or Curtis Johnson and Leon Johnson. Whatever duo you want to find in Carolina history, these guys belong in that conversation. And Lee brought up a great point. The difference is, and we know Kelvin Bryant and Amos Lawrence were great players, Carolina was running the ball 70% of the time. And that may be an exaggeration, but you get my point. Offenses are different now, and those guys are still putting up those kind of numbers. It's impressive.
Amos Lawrence and Kelvin Bryant also didn't have Sam Howell play.
That's right. They didn't have the defense opening up a little bit for right. the pass game. Also true. Right. Those guys gained all those yards against eight-man boxes.
Right. I think Javonte's got – you can almost see defenders thinking now when he runs at them, and they think, oh, this is that guy that runs over people. And today he did run over a couple people, which, as we know, I always enjoy. But I think there were a couple times, too, where you could almost consciously see him think – oh, this guy thinks I'm going to run over him. I'm just going to go around this guy. And that's what he did. I mean, I think the outside perception of him is he just gets the ball and runs downhill and all his yards are in a straight line. If you actually watch him, that is not always the case. And then, I know we've talked about this before, but you're completely exhausted from trying to tackle this bowling ball. And then here comes Michael Carter, who's just juking you out of your cleats and cutting all over the field and catching the ball out of the backfield. Carolina has a very good offense.
Yeah.
They have everything. You will not see an offense like this for a while, I don't think, because every piece you need, they have.
I thought the touchdown that Javonte Williams had, it was of 26 yards. I think it made the score 44-14, that might not be right, but something like that, when he didn't get touched. I thought that was the play where you could tell the state defense was like, I am tired of tackling this guy. I am tired of this. And I thought that it was hot. It was hot in this game, especially for the time of year. I mean, it unseasonably warm. And Carolina had a 2-1 almost time of possession advantage. And to the chicken truck discussion, Adam, there were more runs in this game that ended with a Carolina ball carrier, and a lot of times it was Javonte Williams and Michael Carter, but not exclusively, where they were the one doling out the punishment to the one trying to tackle them. I can't remember a game where there were so many aggressive finishes to plays by the ball carrier when the play ended with the tackle.
And all around the ball carrier.
Yes.
Sam Howell put a guy on his back.
The two times the Carolina bench got the most excited, one when Howell went down and laid that block, and two when British Brooks absolutely ended some dude on that play. The Carolina sideline could not have been any happier when those two things happened.
I hope somebody got video of the Carolina sideline on that British Brooks hit, because the game was decided so they could just go ahead and let go.
Right.
There was, like, people were simulating airplanes running up and down the sideline. It was incredible. And I know we have established that we love Brian Hess, but I think you can see the job that he and his staff are doing in the way that Carolina plays and that they seem to relish those kind of plays. They feel like they can make those plays against anybody, and it's not just Javonte Williams. It's every single guy. They all want to be the one to deliver that punishment.
Be the one, Adam.
Yeah, be the one. And it's starting to become a thing you look for in the game. Like, let's see who gets the big – which ball carrier pancakes a defender, who's going to get the big block. And that is not necessarily the reputation that has been attached to Carolina football traditionally.
British Brooks, just one more comment. I mean, he is so respected on the team and so liked on the team. Special teams guy. They voted him special teams captain last year. And remember, we talked to Michael Carter about it last year, and he said, you want to see a bad dude? British Brooks, a bad dude. And he went out there and looked like a bad dude on that particular play. Adam, I think it's interesting that Carolina can put up 48 points and dominate a game this way where Sam Howell, this isn't the game. At the end of the season, you're not going to go, man, remember how good Sam was against State? Hey, he was fine, but that's he didn't need to be Superman Sam Howell. Made the throws. I think he actually missed a throw or two that he, like the one to Walston over the middle is one he would normally make. Michael Carter in the end zone near the end of the first half. He was under a lot of pressure, had to throw that one kind of awkwardly. But there were a couple throws that he more often than not makes that he missed. But what he continues to do so effectively, much more so than last year, is stretch the play, is get out of the pocket, but not necessarily to run. Get out of the pocket to extend the play and then find somebody downfield. He's doing that a lot. He almost got in trouble doing it where he threw across his body to the middle of the end zone that one time. Not a great decision on that particular play, but he's really giving plays a higher chance to succeed by extending the time that he's able to throw.
If any other quarterback makes that throw in the middle of the end zone, you think, terrible judgment by that quarterback. And because it's Sam Howell, you think, well, he obviously saw something I didn't see.
He saw a little window there.
Clearly. I thought he had some extra life on his fastball today.
Yeah,
threw some rockets.
I thought the one to Walston, part of the reason it wasn't caught was because it had so much heat on it.
Yes. And I thought he was smart in the way that he ran. The first time he ran the ball to make yards, not to get away from someone, he slid before anyone was within 5 yards of him. I think because the reputation preceded the defense he was facing of how they've played some of those plays, and he wisely got down. I thought the play he scored the rushing touchdown on, you could really see all the mobility that people have talked about with him that he worked on over the offseason. That looked like Jason Stanisek out there around the edge. And that's this I thought was his most effective use of his legs in a game this year that seemed to bother the opposing defense.
I wanted to pull out a couple of notes here, Adam, that
I thought you were going for a little Cassio right then.
Don't need to do quite any computation right this moment. Second time ever Carolina's had a 200-yard passer, a 100-yard receiver, and two 100-yard rushers in the same game. The other time came against Maryland in 1993. Oh, this is wheelhouse time. Jason Stanisek, the quarterback, Bucky Brooks and Corey Holiday, the receivers, Leon and Curtis Johnson, the running backs.
We had almost mentioned every one of those guys in this pod.
Yeah, already. Yeah, we just normally do in the course of conversation. I'm like, Adam, you know, this chicken sandwich is delicious. Kind of reminds me of Bucky Brooks' kickoff return in the game against Duke in 1992.
You know who used to smash that sandwich? Mike Copeland and Curtis Johnson.
Two players getting 100 or more yards in the same game multiple times. Does that make sense?
Yes.
So
I'm with you.
Javonte Williams, Michael Carter have the Virginia Tech game, and now this game, they both went over 100 yards in both those games. The most recent times that's happened, 2015, Marquise Williams and Elijah Hood did it in the same time against Illinois and against Miami. 1993, Curtis and Leon Johnson did it against Wake and Ohio University. And then two gentlemen we were speaking about earlier, Amos Lawrence and Kelvin Bryant, two of the best to ever play at Carolina. They did it in 1980 four times. No big deal. Dortech, Furman, East Carolina, and Duke, they're just going to each go over 100 yards four times in the same game. So, again, just some of the company that these offensive players for Carolina are now joining. Sam Howell went over 1,000 career passing yards. He passed our good friend Ronald Curry in the Carolina career list. There's a little separation now. There was in the Tar Heel all-time list of passing yards, there's like a big drop between number four and number five. So Howell is now fifth. Fourth is Marquise Williams at 7,965. Then Bryn Renner, Darian Durant, TJ Yates after that. So just more impressive company for all these guys to be keeping.
Took Sam Howell 18 games to go over 5,000 yards.
Well, if you think that's impressive. Whew. Adam, defensively, again, I thought the best thing Carolina, because they were without Patrice Renee, And by the way, I thought DeAndre Hollins played okay. And he's somebody who came on at the end of last season and was kind of forced into action. And Carolina coaches really like his size. He's 6'2". He got a pass interference call. Did you get that one? The one where
he was on the inside?
Where he was on the inside of the play and almost had an interception, but they called him for pass interference?
Well, I think here's what I think happened in that official's mind when that play occurred. I think he saw pass interference when DeAndre Hollins was on the outside to get him to the inside. But he didn't throw the flag because he thought, let's see what happens. Well, then he gets the interception,
right,
or close to interception. I don't think we ever found out for sure what would have happened there. And he goes, well, all right, I should probably throw the flag now. But now I'm going to look dumb because he clearly had inside position.
Right.
I think the pass interference happened when he was still on the outside, but I've never been a rude boy, but that looked like pretty good coverage to me.
So I thought Carolina did a nice job.
What even is pass interference anymore?
It is such a crapshoot.
One particular Saturday, it'll be if you make any contact at all. The next Saturday, it's if you take the guy and throw him down, we might call defensive holding.
Because I thought both teams had some physical plays in the secondary that were not flagged. Both teams.
And remember last year there were multiple occasions where things occur that you think, well, that's clearly pass interference, and it's not.
Right.
No official is perfect, and that's a hard penalty to call, but there needs to be a little more standard baseline on what is or isn't. How much contact is allowed?
Last thing, at least for me, I thought Carolina did a nice job managing the fact that Renee didn't play and then managing the fact they didn't have Bo Corrales. Emory Simmons steps in and, you know, a guy that was a big recruiting get for them, played a little bit last year. He's been shaken up at the beginning of this season, had been mostly special teams, and then goes out, starts the game, makes five catches, had a couple of real nice competitive catches in the first half, and good to see Carolina manage a couple of injuries to starters and not miss a beat.
And I thought, as far as defensively, Chance the Rat, not with the huge numbers. I think he led the team with 8 tackles.
Yeah, but he also had a sack, a forced fumble, and a pick. I mean, he
was there on the important plays.
Yeah.
So he didn't have 15, 16 tackles like he did at times last year, but his 8 were a key 8, a game-changing 8. So I thought he had a really good game. I think you're right about Emory Simmons. I mean, when you're in that role, the only thing you can do is catch it if they throw it to you. Tarnhills threw it to him 8 times. He caught it 5. It's not like he dropped the other 3. That's all you can do. So it would be nice to see Carolina play a game with a full secondary at some point, hopefully soon.
Yeah. Just don't know when they're going to get Duck back. That's I think, in question about how long that'll be. And unfortunately, Renee out today. You know, hopefully he's able to get back in there with that lower body injury. But all in all, Adam, an impactful win, I think, in a lot of ways. I don't think it's a big secret that by the end of the Larry Fedora era, State felt like it had the momentum in this rivalry, both on the field and in recruiting. And I think the recruiting is maybe even the bigger part of it, because the rivalry is going to ebb and flow on the field. But Carolina can't be losing on the recruiting trail to in-state guys to North Carolina State consistently. And that was starting to happen more times than the Tar Heels would accept late in the Larry Fedora era. And in the snap of a Hall of Famer head coach's fingers at him, all of a sudden this thing has flipped 180 degrees.
And I think it's the
both on the field and on the recruiting trail.
And it's the first time since Mack Brown was here before that Carolina's both good and the head coach understands the importance of beating State. I think under Butch Davis, Carolina was better than NC State, but Butch Davis never understood the big deal. He could go out and get fired up for Miami, but he just didn't fully grasp. What's the deal with this NC State rivalry? With John Bunning, Carolina fully understood the importance of beating NC State, but wasn't consistently good. Now the Tar Heels appear to be on the pathway to consistently good, and Mack Brown gets it. Like, he's not getting all the publicity that Roy Williams gets for understanding it, but you can tell by some of the things he says and some of the things he does, he fully understands you got to beat NC State to get where he wants to be, and I think he kind of enjoys it too.
That's seven straight wins as the coach of Carolina for Mac Brown over State after he lost his first five when he was building the program the first time. He's won now seven in a row.
I'll tell you something else about Mac Brown. This is why he's a football coach and the rest of us just sit there and watch him coach football. 99% of the people listening would have taken Grayson Atkinson's helmet away after he clangs the quote-unquote gimme field goal off the upright. No chance you let him kick it again there at the end of the first half. Mac Brown lets him go back out there. He knocks it in. Knocked in another one in the second half. Who knows? That may end up being important over the rest of the season. If those are the two kicks that give him the confidence to be the kind of kicker that Mac Brown clearly believes he can be, then that was a really important moment.
Thought that was funny when we were. I asked him about that in postgame, and he said, well, some people probably wouldn't think it was okay to repeat what I said to Grayson at that time, but it boiled down to, let's make the kick. And, I mean, to Grayson Atkins' credit, while that was not like a last-second field goal as far as a game winner, I think probably Grayson Atkins' immediate future kicking the football for the Tar Heels was probably hanging in the balance there, and he sent it right through.
I think at some point this year he'll make a big kick. Hopefully he will make them consistently over the next couple months because clearly he has the leg.
Yeah. So, 48-21, Adam, what else you got? You saw it from a different angle than I did, Adam. What else? Anything I missed? Anything we missed?
Carolina's offense is so good that we didn't even really mention that De'Ami Brown had a career high in receptions.
Yeah.
Nice job, De'Ami.
Yeah, seven catches, 105 yards. By the way, what was up with that play where De'Ami makes the deep catch and the State guy did take him down to the one, and then the State guy gets up and gives like the incomplete, like, you're not scoring on me, De'Ami Brown. It's like, really, bro? Nah, know the time and score, my friend.
There was one of those in the fourth quarter.
Oh, it was even when Carolina was having some trouble snapping with the reserve O-line, and the snap was bad. Jacoby Criswell did a good job picking it up and handing off, but it ended up being like a 2 or 3 yard loss. And the State defensive lineman, who's a freshman, got up and gave the, you're not running on me. Bro, now's not the time.
A good win, and I thought Mac Brown put it in good perspective with you after the game, kind of turning it forward when he said that got to get ready and do it again next week because the program's not at the point where the Tar Heels can play without the full emotion, intensity, and passion, I think were the three words he said, and expect to win. And today, they played with all of that. You got to have it again next week at Virginia.
He also, I thought he made one other really good point. And I've heard him say something similar before, as I think you have, where he said, you don't win nationally till you can win locally, essentially. You don't win on the road till you can win at home. And he said, those steps are being taken, and we can see it. He said, now the Tar Heels need to take those next steps. Because I think we can probably agree the two poorest performances the Tar Heels have been on the road so far. And it's not because of the crowd. It's just whatever it is. So I'm sure that will be something that will be focused on because the next two are on the road, not long trips, Virginia and Duke, but not in Keenan Stadium either. So see how the Tar Heels take that step.
Yes.
All right. Next week, we'll be back with our regular schedule of pods. We have Larry Miller. We've already told you that coming up on Tuesday. Tar Heel great on the basketball side of things. And then we've got a couple things cooking for the potential for Friday as well. We'll see which one of those interviews ends up making it to air at least first. All right, now Adam's going to tell that New York City story. No, I'm just joking. Just stop tweeting us and asking.
We've already sent it out to the five listeners that we're going to send it out to.
Congratulations if you're one of those five.
Yeah.
Adam texted you personally with that audio.
Yep.
All right. Adam, should we let Javonte Chicken Truck Williams get us out of here for this one?
I think of all the accolades he will probably receive from today, this is the one he'll be proudest of.
Yeah. All right, so we're back with you on Tuesday. We'll take one final look at this State win. Larry Miller, as we mentioned. Adam will have a list, all kinds of other stuff too. But for now, we'll get out of here with a rapid reaction edition of the Carolina Insider.
I'm Javonte Williams. See you later, Big Grits. All right, thank y'all.
When I was small, we had nothing at all. We
pound box of sugar and a stick of margarine. A hot pot of grits kept my family from starving. Steamy hot meal served less than 5 minutes. Big silver pot boiling water salt in it. House full of brothers and sisters, the pot's missing. Pilgrim on a box on the stove in the kitchen.
When I was small, we had nothing at all. We used to eat grits for dinner.
See you later, Big Grit.
The preceding has been a Learfield IMG College presentation of the Tar Heel Sports Network.
Let's jump into Peppa's world of play. Look for spring flowers, hunt for muddy puddles, and bravely explore exciting places with Peppa play sets. Peppa Pig. Inspiring kid confidence.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.